All right, we got a winner. Oh, we got a winner.
We got a winner.
And here we go.
It's been another week in racing. It's time to recap it. And who better to do it than Michael New Magic? Two bros slash pros who cover the highs and lows of racing around the globe on every one of their shows. Real fans look forward to these guys and their last thoughts, cause they know they're not talking out of their royal ascots. What they say makes sense. So ladies and gents, sit back and relax as Blinkers Off presents The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb, because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
What's up, everybody? I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
And this is The Magic Mike Show, episode 316. Mr. Samich.
Huzzah!
You and I are trying out for the baritone choir later today. How you doing?
Good, man. We're hitting that stride, man. We got that, what is it? The melody? No, we're harmonizing. Is that what's going on with this voice of yours?
Yeah. Apologies for my voice. I had my track record of having one cold a month since my kid's been in daycare continues. So got a little bit of a congestion in the chest. So apologies if I a little hard to understand, or if I end up coughing. I'm going to have my one hand over the mute button the whole show. So hopefully it doesn't get too annoying for you.
It is absolutely wild how much more often you get sick once you have a kid. Like, I didn't get sick for like 3 straight years, had a kid, and it's just like clockwork. Every 6 months now. You got no choice. They're around other kids. Everyone's sick all the time. It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, I know getting sick isn't the best thing that either of us saw. What's the best thing that you saw this week, buddy?
Okay. So I was like, it's Keeneland, because these Keeneland cards are ridiculous. Friday and Saturday, both absolutely amazing. Had a wonderful time handicapping them. I cannot wait for the Turf Pick 3, which is going to be one of the best bets across the country every single day that it's offered. $3 base, 15% takeout. It's going to make it so that these payouts are extraordinary. Like, you can't – 50-cent pick threes, you have people hitting the all button. You can spread easily. You can have these tickets where it just – it's not that hard to hit him, even when there's a 20-1 shot. Man, with a $3 base, it's going to get expensive fast if you try and spread out. So I love the fact that you're going to really have to hammer your opinions. You have to find spots that you like, and hopefully these things pay out pretty well. So I'm really excited about that. But I got to give it to Dr. Tang, man. He just won his second BCBCC today. So congratulations, Dr. Tang. Way to knock that puppy out. I know he was hunting a second one, and they had a player's one. In the Money does a player's one for benefiting aftercare for horses, and today was one of those. And he was the winner of, I think it was like 70-some-odd people. Only one seat was available, which is like the toughest type of tournament to win, because you got to be perfect against everybody, and had a little sweat going into the last, and he was able to hold on.
Nice. Congrats, Dr. Tang. That's awesome. I know that he's one of the biggest success stories from the Magic Mike Show Army in terms of tournaments. Once you got involved, he was one of the first people I remember gleaming on, and he really took off. And as you can see, he's got two BCBC seats locked up. So pretty good on you, Dr. Tang. That's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, he's having a year, man. He's got two BCB seats. I think he's got one NHC, maybe two, and he's also got a Pegasus set up already. So he's been crushing it all year.
That is awesome. You kind of took the best thing that I saw is this Keeneland card. My God. I mean, you talked about the Turf Pick 3 and how expensive it's going to be with the $3 base. These races are ridiculous. I mean, I went short. I never went more than 4 deep in any of the races we're going to talk about. You can make a case for almost every horse in almost every race, it felt like, that we're covering on the show. So they brought the stars, and it's not just Saturday. Friday's card's pretty epic. Sunday's card, you got the Spinster and the Truska in that race. So a lot of fun to be had at Keeneland this weekend. I can because it's Keeneland, but man, I can't believe how good it is.
They brought the heat. And I was a little worried, because we're getting a little too close to Breeders' Cup for some of these races. This is the last winning you're in weekend, and sometimes you don't get those huge fields because of it. But man, yeah. These things are loaded. These are big fields, good horses, lots of horses that could take steps forward on an interesting course. Like, I remember Keeneland during the summer meet last year, where there was a rock hard course. You saw records falling left, right, and center. Speed was very good last year around this time when we had Breeders' Cup out there. So it'll be interesting to see how this course plays as well. I know I am personally going to be looking for inside speed, especially going a mile and a 16th. One thing you got to remember about Keeneland is that short stretch at a mile and a 16th. They've got those two finish lines, and you want to be ahead turning for home when you're playing, running to that short stretch. It is tough to close late.
You don't want to be that jockey at Los Al when they were there for the fair meet who he quit riding when he was at the stewards pole. Did you catch that in the summertime?
There have been a couple of those, man. It's like that first second finish line thing messes with people.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I'm sure I would make a mistake like that. Hey, Dr. Tang's in the chat. There he is. I'm sure I would make that mistake.
Yeah,
lots of, it says lots of fluids.
You got to think it's got it can't be easy, right? I would probably ride to the second one every single time. I'd be the idiot like still riding the horse for the extra 16th of a mile because I want to make sure I don't come up short. Because right. I'd much rather go too long than go too short there, right? You know.
Well, and you, it's easy to defend that to the stewards. Like if you the other way, it's bad. It's like, well, yeah. I'm an idiot and forgot where the finish line was. It's like I forgot where the finish line was and I was trying too hard to win.
Exactly.
Like, there's a big difference there.
Wanted to make sure that I got that the bettors all were taken care of in this situation.
On today's show, we're going to be looking at the late pick four sequence at Keeneland on Saturday, October 9th. This is three grade one races, all Breeders' Cup winning year ends as part of this. And then just for shits and giggles, Mike, we've got 11 horses, maiden juveniles, going them two turns for the first time, a lot of them for the first time in that race. Let's get into things, buddy. Riders up. Late pick four sequence at Keeneland on Saturday, October 9th. Race 8 on the card. This is the grade 1 $400,000 First Lady Stakes. Field of 13 fillies and mares, 3 and up, going a two-turn mile on the turf course. Favoritism is on number 3, Althika, at 7-2. She's won a pair of grade 1s earlier this summer at New York. Looks extremely tough for Charlie Appleby. Trainer Chad Brown, Mike, he's got 3 horses in this race. He's trying to win his record 4th straight edition of the First Lady and his record 5th overall here. I used Althika. I think you absolutely have to, but if you wanted to go a little deeper beyond just the 3 horse, where are you looking?
Yeah, I thought this was actually the easiest race to go short in. Althika is a deserving favorite here. Right? And this horse has done absolutely nothing wrong since getting the U.S., was able to win back-to-back stakes races up at Saratoga. One at Belmont, one at Saratoga. That win at Belmont was a one-turn mile win as well. It's kind of a funky turf course a little bit, but a one-turn mile essentially. So the fact that this horse was able to win going shorter, I think, is very important. Some people might kind of poo-poo the distance for this horse after winning a mile and an eighth, going two turns at Saratoga. But the cutback here shouldn't be any issue. Had that deadly kick going a mile, I would expect you're going to see that same kick here from Althika. And the thing is the best horse who is sitting on a logical improvement angle here. I mean, this is second off a layoff. We're later here in the four-year-old season. You would expect Althika to take a step forward, not a step back in this spot. And that makes her extremely dangerous to the rest of the field. I was like this close to singling, like, you know, really close. But speed scares the crap out of me. And that is the only reason I'm using the 9 blowout as well. This is a lone loose leader going a mile on Keeneland's turf, which if you've watched that turf course, the turns are tight. And so if you are on the lead, you're on the inside, you're able to cut that corner, you get 2 or 3 jumps before everyone else who's behind you. It's hard to make these wide moves, which is most likely what Althika is going to have to do coming from further back around a tighter turn because you're losing more ground. You can't get as much momentum going. And then you don't get the inside horse speed gets a couple steps, right? So I love Althika. I am scared blowout can wire this field. And so I'm only going to use the 3 and the 9. I think I'll get through with the 3 and the 9. I have the best horse and I have the pace advantage. So hopefully one of the two can deliver for me.
You and I saw that pretty similarly. Those are my top 2 choices in here. I won't touch on anything because you covered it pretty well. I'm also going to use the 2 Empress Josephine. She's the other European in here. She's only 3. This is an Aidan O'Brien Coolmore homebred, daughter of Galileo. Her past performances are a little spotty, a little up and down. 4 back, she wins the Irish 1,000 Guineas. There's a Group 1 race at the Curragh. Wins that with a big upset over Joan of Arc, who wins next out. Goes to a Group 1 coronation at Royal Ascot Meet. Those are the best female horses going a straight mile in the world. So she gets 8th. I'm willing to forgive her for that one. She lost to Snowlander and Mother Earth. 2 starts back at Goodwood, mile and a quarter. She was very ranked running through that. I'm going to scratch that one out. You look last time out at Leopardstown. The Group 1 Matron, which is against older fillies. She's 4th, only beaten a length and a half. And again, she's right behind Mother Earth, who is under consideration for a Breeders' Cup race for Aidan O'Brien. So I'm going to use her in this spot. I understand if you think that the 3 and the 9 is going to get you out of it. A big reason I'm using this is because earlier in the year at, was it Saratoga? I think it was Saratoga. I used Joseph O'Brien, had the longest shot European horse coming in. And I said, I'm going to throw it in because all the Europeans, they're all better than the Americans. Well, I've got a European who I think is better than all of these American horses, save for the one that you and I both think could be a gate-to-wire threat. So I went 3-9-2 here, but I understand exactly why you'd go 3-9.
Yeah, I don't blame you on the 2. I looked long and hard at Empress Josephine. I'm just a little concerned. I mean, look, the honest answer is this horse, like you said, has been running against probably better than anyone in this field outside of maybe in Althika. And so I understand why you end up on the two Empress Josephine at 10 to 1. I don't think it's a terrible idea. If you don't like blowout, I think using the two horse over blowout as a second horse is a totally plausible option. I kind of like the seven Daddy is a Legend here.
Yes, you do. You always like this horse.
Well, Daddy is a Legend kind of likes Keeneland. And that's the reason. That's the reason I kind of like Daddy is a Legend here. I mean, she's 3 for 5 at the course. She's only 1 for 11 at the distance, though. And so I didn't use her on the ticket. But she's one of those horses that I think has to be considered underneath. And she was only 2 lengths behind Althika going a mile at Belmont. You're getting a better course for here. I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, you got to include Daddy is a Legend. But if you're going to spread in this race, you got to include Daddy's Legend. So if I ended up 4 deep here, I would be using the 7 and the 2 as the additional two horses.
The one horse I didn't use that does scare me, and then we can move on, is the 6 Regal Glory. She doesn't have the best bat class on here. If you look at her previous grade 1 tries, not that strong. Her previous tries at Keeneland, and kind of iffy. The reason I say that is last time out in the Fasig Tipton De La Rose at Saratoga, she ran a sub-22-second final quarter mile to close and get up. So if it turns out earlier in the day that it looks like Keeneland's turf course is just ripe for closers, I might revisit and add this horse. But I'm with Mike. I really think with the 3 and the 9, I got the best horses. And then with the 2, the best of the rest of the horses that aren't being used in that spot. Let's move on to the second leg of the late pick 4 sequence, Saturday at Keeneland, October 9th. Mike, we're going to go back to the 2-year-old boys, field of 13, 2-year-old colts, exactly going a mile and a 16th on the dirt course. This is the grade 1 $500,000 Claiborne Breeders Futurity Breeders' Cup winning for the juvenile. Favoritism is, hey, it's on the real horse, my old buddy, Double Thunder at 4-1. I can't believe this horse is the favorite. I'll be surprised if he goes off as the favorite. I would expect the far outside horse, the 13, to take the most of the money in this race. But lots of different ways you can go 13 in total. Mike, where are you going on top?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those situations where the morning line is just wildly incorrect. And so I'm started to scour sites where I can see if I can get anywhere near the morning line as a fixed odds play on the 13, because I think you're going to see closer to 2-1, maybe even 8-5. Chalfiger, who was the second place horse in that first race, was one of the horses that we said to stable up, 1 for fun, and impressively going a mile last weekend. So that race came back even stronger. Classic Causeway on the outside was one of the most impressive debut horses at Saratoga, period. End of sentence. So for that horse to then come back here, and I realized the draw, and that is the reason why 5-1 is the number on this horse. The 13 post going a mile and 16th is not an easy draw, especially if that horse tries to make the lead in a race that is just full of speed. So I think that's why you see the 5-1 morning line. I think it's wildly incorrect. I think you're getting sub 2-1 most likely when it actually comes out. I didn't have the horse on top, though. For my top pick here, I went to the 5 horse, Don't Wait Up. This is the horse that I think probably is going to end up getting the lead here. I like the fact that Velasquez is coming back. I like the fact that this horse ran very fast up front, but should be able to pretty easily get this distance. It's upstart out of a proud citizen mare. I like the last two workouts. We've got 2 back-to-back bullets since that last race. I think that he is going to be able to take another step forward here. I'm a little concerned about the distance, but I think Don't Wait Up is going to end up being your inside speed, and that is something that I am very interested at Keeneland, especially going that mile on the 16th. Other horse that I was kind of drawn to here for the exact opposite reason. I think Great Escape showed a ton of talent being able to come from off the pace. And I always talk about how I want horses that are professional when they're 2-year-olds. Great Escape was professional last time out, was able to come from off the pace, able to improve second time out. We're now going to stretch out to the full 2 turns. But again, not really worried about that. This is Midnight Storm, is a son of Pioneer Nile out of an Indian Charlie mare. Shouldn't have that much of an issue. I like the fact that we're getting more of a foundation built from that 6 furlong to 7 furlong. And now we're stepping up to the mile of 16th. And I really like how this horse has been training over the Keeneland track.
Keep going. Sorry.
You got 6 works. One of them a bullet 47 flat. The horse clearly likes Keeneland. This was clearly the race that they were pointing to after that 7 furlong win. So I think Great Escape has a big shot in here.
Sorry, there was a slight pause in the feed there, so I thought that you were done. That's why I cut it. You and I agree on the 5. Don't Wait Up. I'm with you. I think the distance, if there was any other real pace in this race, I wouldn't use the 5. It was the last one in, but comes from a very sprinty dam side. But if he gets loose, I think you laid out perfectly what could happen there. The 9 horse I didn't use here, and I didn't use the runner-up Steel Beach, who's a maiden, but shows up here. But that race is very key for the finale that we're going to talk about in the sequence here. So We can put a pin in this. The big reason I don't use Great Escape here is because Rudy Brissett routinely gets all of the Windstar Farm cast-offs. You know, they've spent $200,000 on this horse. They probably thought they were going to Pletcher, to Baffert. The horse kind of, they break it, they bring it along, they go, okay, well, at a yearly $200,000 now is closer to the $7,500 stud fee that Midnight Storm goes for. Let's send him to Rudy. But he did look really impressive. It's just that Rudy doesn't win these types of races. He's 0 for 24 in the graded stakes rank. So I didn't use him, but you're catching a good price on him, so I understand why you're using him. The last horse that you and I agree on is the 3 Stellar Tap. I'm using both Asmussen horses in here. You're just using Stellar Tap, but this is a horse that was so impressive when he won his debut at Saratoga going 7 furlongs, and he's even money favorite in the Iroquois, and he runs off the board. He looks pretty rough, but he didn't look super comfortable that day, and you can forgive him because he's facing winners for the first time, 2 turns for the first time, second career start, so a lot of things that are kind of going against him in that spot. Now he's going to draw a little bit more inside. Ricardo staying on, which I think is a big deal considering he was aboard the stablemate too in the past. So I think the fact that Ricardo's saying, let's take one more ride with this horse in a grade one, it's making me say that. Is that why you went with him too?
Yeah, I mean, I also just going to give the horse another chance. I mean, we thought he had a ton of talent. He shouldn't be limited based on the breeding from going 2 turns. So I was kind of surprised that he struggled with the distance. And Santana shows up here, right? I mean, that's the reason I'm not using the 11 that you are using, is that Santana left the horse just to stay on Stellar Tap. And I think Stellar Tap is probably the more talented horse anyway. So when you combine the fact that you get Santana, and I think it is the more talented horse, I don't have a reason to kind of throw the 11 on there. Although, you know, 20-1, I wouldn't argue too much with you. I'm surprised you're not using our boy,
it's the number boy.
8, King Curlin. Come on, man. Like, okay.
You were 1-9 to use this horse, by the way.
I know. Well, of course, 30-1.
At 30-1, you were 1-9, yeah.
Look, if you're telling me this horse is 9-2, I have absolutely no interest. King Curlin was put in a Kentucky Downs race because they didn't want to run this horse at Arlington because they were going after that $134,000 purse. King Curlin ran huge in that race. If you go back and watch it, there's a 59 buyer there. I'm going to call BS there. That was better than a 59 buyer race. And we had a special spy at Kentucky Downs that day. Geis Paddle was there, and he was near Brittany when she was talking about this horse, and she loves him. She thought the horse was going to win that day. The fact that you're not – that this is where you show up, you're showing up in a freaking grade one next. Mm-hmm. They think this horse can run. I have no issue with the turf to dirt, right? I mean, this is a Curlin horse. It's going to be able to route. You don't think that's going to be an issue. At 30-1, if I'm spreading, I don't know how I don't use this horse.
Listen, especially when I saw that you went 5 deep, it makes perfect sense. You all great points. Also, we learned after the Kentucky Downs race that Chris Emai is her boyfriend, so that's why he travels for the mount. So the fact that he continues to travel to ride this horse that is now homeless since Arlington's gone, I think that speaks volumes. I think this is too much, but I think I love the aggressiveness. I love that she's going, that she's showing how much she loves the horse, that she's backing up what Geis Paddle heard. So, listen, if this horse wins and you end up cashing your pick 4 ticket, I'm going to be damn happy for you. It's not a horse that I would use, but you were so high on him in that first race.
That thing's going to pay if this horse wins.
yeah, exactly. Oh, JD says they're married now, man. They were dating last on September 11th. Now they're married. Wow. Things happen. Really, but
if King Curlin wins, I will need to know where that registry is.
That's a good point. I'm rolling through the comments here. A bunch of people saying they like Great Escape. Well, that's a bad sign for me. Nick says he's going to give Stellar Tap another chance. Yeah, shouldn't lose because of breeding and the way everything looked. Yeah, I'm with you, Nick. And Mike is as well. The last horse I use, I mentioned, is the 11, Costa Terra. This is the other Steve Asmussen horse. Arietta gets back in the saddle after being aboard when the horse won on debut. I think the horse was literally just getting – I watched both replays. That horse was just getting going at 5 furlongs in the slop. Then goes the Ellis Park Juvenile. He's the favorite at even money. He got – in the stretch, he was tipping off the turn to make a run, and the horse that ends up finishing second kept drifting out, and so he had to dive – it doesn't say it in the trip notes, but he had to dive back inside and kind of redirect – and he had the lead 2 jumps after the wire. It was like, oh, this horse was clearly going to win this race. He just had a rough trip. He's going to have to work out a trip from post 11 here, but I think this horse has a lot of talent. The fact that they are sending a Stellar Tap here, but Costa Terra has been kind of pointing this way for a while, is a good sign. And he's also a half-brother to a horse named Pneumatic, who is a stakes winner in a dirt route. So he's got the breeding. I'm getting a good price at 20-1. He's by Gun Runner, who's been red hot with these horses. He's going to need a big jump up, but if I'm going to trust one horse that I think takes a big jump up, other than your 8 King Curlin, it's this horse who's by Gunrunner, who's proven that his horses, they take that jump, Mike. It is huge when they blow up.
Yeah, it is. And I also look back at that Ellis race, and the winner of that was Roger McQueen, who came back to run in the Iroquois and finished ninth, 18 lengths back.
He was almost last, yeah.
Of Major General. And so that also was my other reason where it's like, yeah, I've talked about that. I love looking at these two-year-old races and looking at who they beat in their maiden special weight, how those horses came back, because a lot of times that's going to tell you quite a bit. And sometimes, you know, you got to look at the field versus just the level. Sometimes you have like a maiden claimer 50 that comes back better than some maiden special weights if they all move up and win. So you got to take a peek at that. It's very easy to do when you're looking through your past performances.
Especially on not that they're a sponsor, but DRF Formulator makes it really easy to do that shit. I don't know how I do this.
I like them.
If I was just using Equibase, I don't know how I do this. We'll move on to the third red leg of the late pick four sequence at Keeneland on Saturday, October 9th, race 10. This is the grade one $750,000 Keeneland Turf Mile Stakes. No longer the Shadwell Turf Mile, no longer $1 million, but a field of 13 males, four and up, nonetheless, enter to go. A mile on the turf course. Favoritism is number 10, Order of Australia, your defending Breeders' Cup mile champion. He is the favorite at 7-2. Your defending race champion, Ivar, who was fourth in the Breeders' Cup mile, is 5-1 on the morning line, and this is a Breeders' Cup win, and you're in for the mile. Mike, this one felt like the most of a mess, and I kind of chalked out a little bit, but I have a price on a little bit of a price on top. Where'd you go?
I went up with Ivar on top. I'm calling the back-to-back winner here.
Oh, boy.
The horse likes Keeneland, loves the distance, 2 for 5. We've talked about Paulo Lobo before on this show. He is a very good trainer and gets horses ready for spots like this. I think that he is set up to run a pretty big one here. First off the layoff, but it's the kind of first in his cycle here for the later five-year-old season. The adding blinkers thing, you kind of like scratch your head a little bit, but then you go back and you look, and the horses run 100 and 102 buyer, including finishing third in the Tourist Mile at Kentucky Downs with blinkers. So I got no issue there. And I think this is just going to set up really well for Ivar. I love the fact that you've got tactical speed here, but he can kick because there is enough speed here that I think you're going to have a struggle for the lead. And if that happens, I think you're looking for a horse kind of like Ivar who can come from just in the mid pack and get the job done. Other must use for me. I'm going to go to the 7 Pixelates coming off a win in the, the Mint Million or something like that from Kentucky Downs. They went very fast early, and this horse was 6 lengths off the lead, so kind of got the perfect setup there. But I love it when you see a 4-year-old who just keeps taking steps forward, just incremental, small steps forward. And that's what we've seen here from Pixelate through this entire season. Runs fourth to Colonel Liam, then runs second to Corelli, steps up and wins a race. It runs a 94 buyer at Colonial, and then cuts back to a mile, runs the best race of its career, gets a 99 buyer. Now we're getting second off that. And I think there's going to be enough pace here that Pixelate's going to sit a really nice trip mid-pack, be able to make a big-time run. So the 6 and the 7, to me, were the two first or must-use horses.
Yeah, Pixelate's got a really devastating turn of foot when he needs to unleash it. I didn't use him. I did use Ivar as a horse that I famously last year would have cashed on the pick four had I not said I'm gonna look at Ivar for next race because I want to see how he runs without blinkers the first time here at 20-1. That was a stupid mistake. Stayed with him in the Breeders' Cup mile and he was the best non-Aiden O'Brien horse in the race, so that's got to be something about it. I used the 10 Order of Australia, as did you. I don't think there's a whole lot of reasons why we need to dive into this. He's very classy. He loves Keeneland. There really isn't much more to get into about that horse.
The less we talk about Order of Australia, the better.
Yeah, I think
I still hate that horse for beating Circus Magnus.
if Michael Myers was in the chat, maybe I'd be entertaining it. My top pick is actually it's the top one on the screen there. The number 4 Space Travel. This is my first time ever playing this horse. He's got some American experience. He was in the Breeders' Cup Mile 2 years ago when it was at Santa Anita. Didn't run very well, but they liked him enough that they sent him back to Brendan Walsh this year permanently. This is a horse that likes to run from off the pace, and he likes to close. Well, he goes to the Mr. D Stakes at Arlington. What happened this year in the Mr. D Stakes, Mike? Domestic Spending couldn't catch the runaway winner of that race. This horse managed to rally from 8th, 8.5 lengths off to be 4th, 3.5 lengths behind the winner when there's no reason he should have been passing any horses from dead last in that spot. They bring him back to the Woodbine Mile. It's a one-turn mile up there. The horse runs very well. Again, he can't catch the goddamn runaway loose pace setter. In this case, it's Town Cruise. We're not getting that in this race. I don't see anybody who's – I mean, if someone like a Hot Brown was the only speed, I'd say maybe it's going to be another repeat. We're not getting that here. This is a horse who loves to rally. It's going to be third off the layoff, third time with Brendan Walsh, third time of this form cycle here. I think this is a horse that I wish I get 6-1. I think the odds are going to be in my favor. I think I'm going to look closer to 8-1, maybe 10-1 on this horse because I think the fact that he hasn't gotten a win against really big company since 2019, I think they're going to hold that against him here.
Yeah. Look, I consider this horse. And, you know, I know JD talked about this horse quite a bit when we were on a live stream together for that Woodbine Mile. I don't like the wood by mile effort as much as I think you do. They came home in 12.77 seconds. I was actually talking to Ryan Notnick about this today. And I just, that's not fast. I mean, you run a mile in 135 in a grade, in like a top tier, was a grade one, right? Mm-hmm. Grade one wood by mile. You're coming home in 12.77 and you can't get by. Like that to me is, it's one of those things where, yeah, the turf course was playing towards speed. Yes, the horse had a pretty loose lead, that there's a bunch of reasons why I get that the, you know, that Space Traveler may not have been able to do it, but this is a tougher group. I'm sorry, but like
it is.
Yes. I think this is a lot harder, and I want more than what the 6-to-1 price is, and I'm not sure Space Traveler is good enough to get by these horses if he wasn't good enough to pass Town Cruise that day. So that's the reason I left the four off, and I'm probably going to play against pretty much everyone in the Woodbine Mile unless I get a monster price coming back on Raging Bull or Set Piece, because neither of them made up ground either. So maybe that could be your argument that he was able to when neither of them could. But, you know, I'll let him beat me here. I did use the 5, Tell Your Daddy, who I think is going to be on the lead. I know that Some Like a Hot Brown has some speed, but Tell Your Daddy's the inside horse. And Julian Leperoux in Kentucky on the turf, if he's got speed, he's sending. And so I think you're going to see him get to the first turn first. If I'm going 5 deep, I want the horse who I think is going to be at the lead on top of the stretch. Talk about that a lot. I think that in this case, that's the 5 horse, Tell Your Daddy. And Morley's been training great. I mean, he's had a serious uptick at Belmont in the later part of the Saratoga meet. So he's been hot lately. And then I am going to use the 11 horse, Diamond Oops. This is one where I thought that turf sprint was a sneaky good race. I thought he ran big there against Gear Jockey. A little concerned about the distance, may not be his best, but he's run well here at Keeneland. He was actually in the Shadwell Turf Mile and ended up second to Bodie's Hero. I think he's going to sit right behind both the 5 and I think the 8 has some speed as well, but most likely the 5 and the 13. And I think he's the one who kind of trips out, and we'll see what happens if he's able to be good enough to win. But I think he is going to sit the perfect trip in this spot.
There's a nice interview on Twitter as well. Who sent that to us? I can't remember. I'm blanking on it. But someone sent us, one of our listeners sent us a nice link with Andy Biancone, who's the assistant trainer, daughter of trainer Patrick Biancone, talking about why they are going to keep this horse on the turf when he won the Phoenix Stakes, which is this Friday, at Keeneland last year. They think at his age, at age 6, turf is going to be the better surface for him moving forward. And he really doesn't do a whole lot wrong on the turf. He is only 1-for-6 winning-wise, but you brought up a great point, Mike, that in this race, the only time he's tried routing on turf was this race 2 years ago, and he was right there at the front every step of the way, and Bowie's Hero just kind of freaked. That was a once-in-a-generation performance from Bowie's Hero that day. It was a huge price, too. So I didn't use him, but you're getting 15-to-1 on him. He's the first one in if there's a scratch, because that 15-to-1 price almost tipped the scales for me in that direction.
It was Philip McIntyre who sent it over. So if you want to check that out, I think we both liked it. I think you might have retweeted it as well. So yeah, Philip McIntyre sent that over. The interview wasn't what put me over the top. I don't really listen to trainers. I think they lie more than they tell the truth.
Yes.
No offense to any trainers out there, but I generally will not listen too much to it. I think JD brings an interesting point about field pass here. He is definitely a better horse at a flat mile. And I agree that the 4-star Dave is kind of a chuck race because of how it was run up front and then how your girl was able to get the job done there. I have a big concern, and this is the same reason I'm not using Some Like a Hot Brown, with these horses that are on the outside that kind of have to make the trip, you know? I like Diamond Oops because I think he has the tactical speed to sit right behind the lead. I'm worried that Field Pass is in that third group and like 4 wide. I see Field Pass having a tough trip from the 12, where like Some Like a Hot Brown's gonna have to use horse and end up 2 wide. I think Diamond Oops is gonna have to just be naturally cruising and may end up in the 2 path or maybe even on the rail right behind the leaders. Field Pass, I think, could be in that next group. And it's tough when you're in that mid pack and an outside draw. That's when you end up getting spun like 4, 5, 6 wide.
Space Traveler was second in the Woodbine Mile, 3/4 of a length ahead of Raging Bull. Field Pass, every time he tries to race in a grade one, it's pretty bad, including 3 grade ones back when he lost pretty badly to Raging Bull going a mile on this course. I don't want anything to do with him here. I think he is a great horse when you're going grade 2, grade 3 company. You put him in grade 1 against these big boys, there's too much talent here. There's too much talent. You put this horse in grade 1 in California on the turf, he'd probably win. But out here, no.
So your reasoning for not using Some Like Hot Brown, I assume, is the post, just like me?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the biggest reason. Also, I don't understand how the hell is this horse 0-for-4 at a mile on turf. That doesn't make any sense. This horse loves speed. You would think that a mile – no, mile and a 16th, that's where, other than Set Piece, he's perfect at. Yeah, but the post is a big – it is not the only reason, but it is a big reason. You ready to move on?
Let's do it.
All right, final race of the late pick for Keeneland on Saturday, October 9th. Race 11, Mike, we got 11 Juvenile Colts going a mile and a 16th on the main track. Favoritism is on the number 7, Giant Game at 4-1. Number 3, Hitting Bombs at 9-2 is your second choice. You and I really like the 7, Giant Game, a lot. Not so much agreement on the other horse or horses we're going with here. But first, talk about Giant Game and why you're using him.
Yeah, I'm just going to end up too deep here. And this is the other race that I thought you could kind of go short on. I mean, I guess you could spread out if you really wanted to, but I wanted to go 5x5 in those middle two legs and didn't want to make the ticket too expensive. Look, Giant Game, we talked about Great Escape. We talked about Seal Beach. I'm using Great Escape. It's his second time out for Giant Game. And both of those horses were in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Futurity, or the Breeders' Futurity. And that's the reason why that race has come back so strong at Churchill. Dale Roman, second off the layoff, generally better than first time out. He races his horse in a little bit. So I'm expecting a little bit better of an effort. Also, this is a Giants Causeway horse out of a More Than Many ready mare. I would assume that the stretch out is pretty good. The 7 furlongs, probably a tough distance to debut at as well. You got a bullet back on September 13th, 47 and change. And then the workout right afterward, going 48 flat for 4 furlongs on October 2nd is also pretty solid. I think this horse is just absolutely ready to be to go. How many Roman's horses do you see there? $500,000 too from West Point Thoroughbred. So I think the 7 horse is a pretty logical horse here. I don't think you're getting 4-1 on race day, but I think the 7 does make a ton of sense.
Well, the horse is co-owned by Albaugh Family Stables, and Albaugh Family Stables averages about $500,000. I'm not joking about $500,000 sticker price for their horses, so that helps a little bit. But yeah, great points on Giant's Game. That I watched that race, I think, 4 different times because there was 4 horses coming out of it just for this race. And Giant Game was my favorite coming out of that race. My top pick, I'm going to go all the way outside, or not all the way, almost all the way outside. The number 10, Let My People Go. I normally don't play Vicky Oliver. If you remember Kentucky Downs, I just kept passing every single time. But she and Rafael Berrano, they've got a good thing going. 12% overall, sorry, 13% overall. They have almost a positive ROI when they're winning together at Keeneland. So you got a good jockey trainer combination. It's a horse that's by Pioneer of the Nile out of Forestry Mare. And at first I was like, well, Forestry, that's usually pretty sprinty. So I looked at the siblings. The siblings combined for 5 wins from 21 tries routing. 8 times they were in the money, and that's combined between dirt and turf. So routing is what the family likes to do on that side. You're getting Pioneer of the Nile on top. The horse did a very strong finish at Kentucky Downs. Like you mentioned with a race earlier, King Curlin, that buyer, Chuck It, horses have been doing really well at Kentucky Downs. They've been exiting and starting to do well as well. We saw last year how strong the Kentucky Downs form held throughout the year. So I like this horse. I like that I'm going to get 8-1. I think that I'm going to get every bit of that. Because if you look, this horse was 16-1 on debut, 10-1 at Kentucky Downs. So I don't think anybody's going to be looking too closely at a horse with a career best dirt buyer of 53.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is one of the ones where I actually ended up with this horse as my 3rd pick in the race. So okay. If I had gone 3 deep, this was the next one in for me. The reason it didn't end up making the ticket was that Ellis Park race 2 back has produced nothing. And so you've had almost every horse run out of there. You have a couple horses run 2nd. This is one. There was another one who finished, I think it was like 7th in that race. He ran back 2nd. The winner of the race ran into a $75,000 stakes field, ended up running 3rd. So that's not bad, but it doesn't exactly blow you away compared to what Giant's Game did. Other horse I'm going to use here is the 6 horse Surfer Dude. It's a pretty easy handicap for me. If you haven't heard it enough in this, I want the horse on the lead when we're going a mile and 16th at Keeneland. And I think the 6 horse Surfer Dude is going to be that horse. The horse showed a ton of speed going 5 furlongs at Colonial, then showed speed going 6-7 furlongs at Churchill Downs. There's not really anyone else in this field that I think can run early with Surfer Dude. I guess the 4, Call Me Midnight, maybe the other horse is kind of pressing the pace here. But if Surfer Dude gets loose out there, and this is a son of Curlin out of a Tisnow mare, 2 turns should hit this horse right between the eyes. And if we can get the lead and we can be comfortable, I want the horse again who's turning for home in the lead. I think that's going to be Surfer Dude here. So I'm just going 6-7. I'm going to take the horse who I think is the best and the horse who I think is going to be on the lead. You'll notice that theme for me here at Keeneland.
That big Great Escape race, Mike, the 4 horses who were the last 4 positions early, they were the last 4 positions pretty much all the way around. The top 4 pretty much just made top 4 from start to finish in that race. So I didn't take a whole lot out from that as far as Surfer Dude because he was leading. And I was like, you should have been at that pace, which I think is probably about the same fractions he's going to set in this one. I felt that he should have been able to hold on better. Being a Curlin out of a Tisnow mare to, 7 furlongs, this horse should have been able to survive better than that. But he didn't. He was stuck inside. He broke from the rail and was stuck inside horses and tried making a move at the top of the stretch and just didn't have anything in it. I did look very closely at him. The 5-1 price is what scared me off. If I was getting something like 8-1, maybe I'd consider him. But at 5-1, I don't have faith the way this horse ran previously that he can handle the two turns. But if he gets loose, like you're kind of predicting here, Mike, I can easily see how he ends up wiring, even if two turns isn't what he's really going to be best at.
Well, one of my friends, Justin Dew, always says one of the best angles is Corey Lannery off. And here we're getting Corey Lannery off and getting Alvarado off. So we'll see what happens there, too. Look, Corey, Call Me Midnight, the other before us, I think is interesting here, too. He's coming out of the same race, actually finished in front of Surfer Dude, but kind of ran more of a flat effort, whereas I think Surfer Dude kind of got out faster and then cut back. I think if Surfer Dude can go like 23-47 and be on the lead, I think he wins the race. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to do that. But if we are able to get those fractions, I think he'll be able to sustain the distance much longer. Because when you're going 22 and change, 45 and change, I expect that horse to tire a little bit more.
Last horse I use is the Three Hitting Bombs. He's also exiting that race. He was a 7-2, I think, third choice in that race. Brian Lynch isn't known for having super strong debut two-year-olds, so the fact that this horse was 7-2 in that big field of 10 horses says a lot to me. Was pretty bad out of the gate and never really got going. He didn't quit. He just kind of kept running and running and running and following horses. So maybe two turns will wake him up. Maybe the second start wakes him up. I also like that he had one work out of that, and he went 47-1. Brian Lynch went one work, and he went, all right, he's still good. Let's send him into this race now. So I'm going to forgive him for that. He is by Gunrunner. So, you know that the Gunrunners are going to be making hay on the dirt. Also, Julian Le Perroux, you remember, we haven't talked about it, but Ed DeRosa tweeted out that really great breakdown of Keeneland riders on the dirt. Julian Le Perroux was one of the best riders of the entire collection of jockeys. Julian Le Perroux is one of the best. I've always been a Julian Le Perroux fan of the show, so I think that the fact that he stays aboard is a positive.
Yeah, I looked at this horse. This is actually the horse I ended up with in fourth.
Wow, okay.
Ironically, Gunrunners, this is kind of surprising to me because you think a Gunrunner going two turns. Sprinting, he's 26%. Sons and Daughters of Gunrunner. Going routing, it's only 17%. Obviously still very good, but significantly worse right now, routing versus sprinting. You could probably...
What's the sample size? Just out of curiosity, do you know?
Sample size is 15 for 56 on the dirt sprint. And 3-17 dirt routes. 0-4 on the turf still, by the way. So if you see Gunrunners on the turf, do not play them. Wait to see him actually produce some turf progeny before you do it. So that's one of those funny things. You hear about these hot sires, right? And Gunrunner is clearly one of those two-year-old hot sires. You can't leave Gunrunner off right now. Practical Joke, another one. Can't leave him off. Practical Joke sucks going two turns. Sucks on the turf. So there's certain areas where you can leave him off and actually get an advantage by understanding kind of where certain horses have produced and where they have not.
Did we hit all of your horses in this? We did.
Yeah. I was 6-7, 10-3. So the 6 and 7 were the only two that made the ticket, but I agree with you on the 10 and the 3 and the 4. I thought was interesting as well. If you want to go crazy or you have a single somewhere earlier in the sequence, you like.
Yeah. The 4 is a giant wild card because Kent DeSorm was on and I don't know. Normally I'd be like, oh, the horse is probably going to push the pace and then fade. I don't know what Kent's going to do. I really don't. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, it's just an interesting setup, right? I mean, it's a Midnight Lose horse out of First Defense Mare. The Tomlinson for the distance is pretty good. You had those two races early in the two-year-old season, and then you come back and you see a clear improvement third race, first off the layoff. Now you're getting second off the layoff. I mean, you can make an argument that that horse could take a logical step forward. So if you really wanted to spread, again, I think the 4 is kind of usable too, but I felt like you kind of had to choose what races you're going to take stands in, and I thought the first and this last race were the two best to take the stand in.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Magic Mike Show. Thanks for joining Mike and I to go through the late pick four sequence at Keeneland. I'm happy that my voice survived. I was really nervous about 5 minutes before the show started. I was hacking up a lung. So I'm happy we made it. I'm happy you joined us to go through this. If you can give us a like, a thumbs up, we'd really appreciate it. We're going to go through our tickets one last time. If you're watching live or the replay, just take a look right below. If it'll click, there it goes. I'll start off. I'm going to go 239 with 3-5-11-13 with 4-6-10 with 3-7-10 for $54. Your ticket, please.
I am going to do a 50-cent ticket and go 3-9 with 3-5-8-9-13 with 5-6-7-10-11 with 6-7 for 50 cents. That'll cost you $50. And it looks like, Dennis, if you got a question on a horse, shoot us the number. Oh, there it is. Never mind. So we'll take a peek at it here. Anything else you want to talk about around the Keeneland cards from Friday or Saturday, Magic?
No. Other than just to head over to racingdudes.com, the inside track to the Keeneland Turf Mile wagering guide is available now for sale. I was up until after 1 a.m. working on that. That thing is a beautiful piece of work now that Aaron has written it all. Now, so you see, there's plenty of Breeders' Cup previews in your in races on Friday, Saturday, Sunday between Keeneland and Belmont. So all of the previews, all of the results, all the replays will be here also at racingdudes.com/breeders-cup. But make sure you go purchase that inside track to the Keeneland Turf Mile wagering guide. If you subscribe for at least 30 days for any subscription, you will get this guide and you officially will get the Breeders' Cup guide included for free. So if you were thinking about getting the Breeders' Cup guide, you're thinking about playing Keeneland, get the subscription at $70. It's going to more than pay for the two guides. And then you're going to every pick, every race across the country. You can check out the Summer Bombs. You can add on some Ricky's Rockets. A lot of fun. And Mike, speaking of fun, I know you're going to have a lot of fun handicapping everything this weekend for the Summer Bombs.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast, man. Already got through Keeneland's card for tomorrow. I'm thinking I might add Belmont as well. So damn close to Belmont today. It's really frustrating, actually. It was like I added a horse in the fourth race that drew in and took out the horse that ended up winning the race. And it cost me the pick four and the pick five early, which is kind of frustrating. Also cost me 5 out of 6 in the pick six, which was kind of frustrating. But hey, what can you do? Welcome to horse racing. So I'm going to have Belmont, I think, tomorrow and send some Keeneland. It will definitely be a Keeneland Saturday, definitely be a Keeneland on Sunday. I'm going to figure out how to include the turf pick three as well. I think it might just be in the comments. So if you do end up going there, check out the comments. I might be doing that instead of the pick four is the free ticket in the article too, just so that it's out there for everybody. I think that I really want to promote that bet because it's such a cool, unique bet. I love the denomination, love the takeout. I think I like it when racetracks innovate. I think that's just, to me, that's good. That's good for the sport, good for the gambler. And in this case, they found a good way to do that. Now watch, we're going to rain off the turf all 3 days. There's not going to be any big three. Real quick, Dennis brought up a horse, the four horse. It's Modus Operandi, who, man, I really think this horse scratched out at Saratoga. I don't remember for sure, but the name just kind of clicks in. Also, shout out to Modus Operandi's last race. Follow Nevin on Twitter. It's the racetrack named a race called Follow Nevin on Twitter. It's Nevin Racetrack. So well done, guys.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a son of Frankel, and it absolutely aired in that race. So one that's really interesting to me, I agree with you, Dennis. Brendan Welch, not great first time North America. That would be the one knock on it, but pretty good first time in the barn. I think the horse is definitely interesting. I have not looked through this entire race. But 100 time for him coming over first time and being able to be successful at 1.25 miles, if there's any give in the ground, I would absolutely love this horse. But if it's a firm ground, then we got to kind of figure out whether or not the horse is going to take to it. But at 6-1, I mean, the price is right and you don't see any monsters in here as I quickly kind of scroll through and look at the morning lines and the favorites. So I don't see any reason why the horse couldn't win.
Yeah, there's a bunch of, Scarlet Fusion's got talent but doesn't like to win.
I mean, the brown horse, the three horse right to the inside is going to be the favorite, has absolutely no speed, but won impressively at Saratoga and did it while getting a awful trip. There's just not many horses that won going 2 or 3 wide in the first turn and 5 wide in the second turn at Saratoga, the entire meet. So it was a really impressive race, and it's probably better than what it looks like on paper. So the three horse is going to go off as your favorite. And the question is, there's going to be enough speed early or not for someone to kind of catch them late. The fact that the four has speed, I think, is really interesting. If you look in the running lines, it says right to lead, close in second. So the four horse actually has more speed than most Europeans, which may play very well in this spot.
You also have the benefit of the dam sire being Montjoux. Montjoux is a 12 furlong stone cold turf horse, so plenty of distance pedigree. So the fact that this horse is going 1.125 miles in his first test, you see, it was going 1.25 miles, 1.5 miles. Also was with Aiden O'Brien. This tells me, Mike, this horse was bought by Coolmore for $900,000, was with Aiden O'Brien, and then Aiden was like, this horse isn't going to do anything, so they sold him off privately. Nothing wrong with that, especially if Bobby Flay's getting $900,000 for that horse.
This is an interesting race, too, man. I mean, you look at the one horse kitten set, $1.4 million purchase, son of American Pharoah in the Brad Cox barn. They've tried to get the horse on turf twice. Both times it gets rained off. Now is going to probably be the first time you see kitten set on turf. Like that, this is an interesting race. This is why I love Keeneland, man. Like, you know, Dennis brings up a single horse, and now we are four deep into the race where it's all these interesting horses that you could end up playing.
Well, over racingnews.com/sports, they're very excited because it's OU Texas week. Oklahoma 5-0, Boomer Sooner going to face the 4-1 Texas Longhorns. You can get the free pick and analysis of the game from the two of the biggest Oklahoma fans, Papa Dude and Aaron, right here. You can listen to Dudes Who Bet Sports. They were very honest about their opinions of OU's chances in that game. I say it every time, but that show is so much fun. Papa Dude gets on those rants, and you just sit back with your popcorn and enjoy it. You can also check out free picks for every NFL and college football game, so head over there. And then, Mike, you're going to be doing your six-pack this weekend. Any games on Thursday that you're looking at or any lines that caught your eye?
I mean, this Thursday night game, Rams Seahawks, is difficult. I mean, it is a tough spot. I'm going to not play it pregame. If I did, I would play Rams first half. I'm going to try and get Seattle like +5, +6, +7.5. Because if the Rams get up, Seattle is going to be able to come back here. Like Russell Wilson comeback mode at home on a Thursday night, I think is awfully interesting. If you can find 3.5, if you want to start parlays at 3.5 and buy a point, I don't hate that from Seattle's side. If you're going to – like, other thing I consider is just Seattle money line. NFC West teams, the underdog has won every single game so far in division. I think it's just a sample size of two. But, hey, they're still 2-0. So still undefeated in that spot. But I think this is one of those spots where, you know, if either team gets up and you can catch any more than a touchdown, I would expect this game to end up close, especially if the Rams get up early. I think you're going to be able to get between 5 and 7.5 on Seattle. And I, you know, Russell Wilson on the comeback train is a pretty good train to play there. So I'm definitely interested in Seattle in game if we can find a way to do it. My buddies Coastal Carolina play tonight. They're given 20.5. That might be a little bit steep, but you know, yeah, it's still not too bad. It's one of those where if you just want action playing Coastal and hoping they win by 3 touchdowns, I don't think it's a terrible idea. Coming up on Sunday, the NFL slate's actually pretty competitive. I can't believe I'm saying this. I kind of like the Falcons against the Jets in London. It's a little bit of a mess. I kind of like the over more than anything else. The over is 45.5. The Falcons can't rush the passer. As bad as Zach Wilson is, when he has no pressure, he gets a little frisky. The Falcons seem to figure things out last week, and also the Jets defense sucks as well. So I'd expect both of those teams can kind of put up some points. Do you got some interesting lines? I can't believe Green Bay's only given 3, but I don't really want to take them as a road favorite. The Titans -4.5 on the road is another one of those where it's like, you know, with everything that's going on in Jacksonville, and it seems like Urban Meyer is trying to get fired at this point, like literally trying to get fired. And when you hear about what happened, so obviously you had the whole scandal going on. He comes back into the building on Tuesday, and after not flying home with the team, he goes to this bar and gets grinded up on and all that jazz. He doesn't even address the full team. He goes to meeting room after meeting room after meeting room, to the individual groups, so like the offensive line and the defensive line, the quarterback's room, the linebacker's room. Like they already didn't really respect him. And after all this happens, like you can't think the guy's all that big of a professional, and like he's already getting out coached every single week. It seems like this is a recipe to fail, and you're kind of looking for a reason to hit the eject button and take a flight out to see Magic and land at USC. So you just have the feeling that this Jacksonville team isn't going to show up. The Titans' defense is awful. They're out both of their wide receivers. So it's one of those where it's like, man, I don't really know if I want to endorse it, but it's a terrible spot to be Jacksonville. You're on mute, Magic.
Sorry, I was coughing earlier. So I lived in Orlando for about 5 months. A few years ago, actually, no, it's been 11 years ago. Wow, 12 years ago? Jesus. A long time ago, Tebow Mania was at its full swing in the University of Florida. And so I was a huge fan of the Gators, of Tebow, of Urban Meyer. I loved everything about it. 12 years later, looking back, Mike, I can see the error of my ways. Tebow, absolutely dreadful, just football player. I don't even want to specify a position at this point. Urban Meyer, you remember when he was the one that was going to replace Jason Garrett for the Cowboys? Can you imagine him having a shit show like this at least in Jacksonville, nobody knows it's really a shit show. If he's on the Dallas Cowboys head coach, you know every single bit of detail every day. Although now that video of him with the strippers emerged, I understand why he didn't go to Dallas, because Dallas and Houston are supposed to be like mega spots for strip clubs. So I get why he didn't go with the temptation there.
Well, you realize it wasn't strippers, right?
Oh, I was told it was strippers. I don't know. It was only half.
Oh, okay. He was at his own brew house. So it's like Urban Meyer's Beer Garden in Columbus, Ohio. Because, you know, if he
right. coached Ohio State.
Yeah. Right, which you're open it. And so it's a bunch of Ohio State, like, college girls.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. And he was there to celebrate like his son's birthday or something. Like it just, the whole story is an absolute mess, man. It just kind of gets worse and worse. But it's just interesting, man. And I guess his wife put something out on Twitter today and then said she was going to turn off her Twitter. So it's just a mess of a story there. If he was in Dallas, it'd be terrible. He's just the perfect college guy. I think even at USC, it might be rough because it's such a big city. Like, he's perfect for Gainesville, where he is the king.
Yes.
He's perfect for Columbus, where he is the king and no one questions you, right?
Yep.
It's interesting when he goes other places. But you've seen this from a lot of other like big-time, high-profile college coaches coming to the NFL. There's not that many that have transitioned that well. I know Bobby Petrino, for instance, went to Miami and just left after 6 weeks on his motorcycle, never to be seen again until he crashed his motorcycle with a volleyball player.
Wasn't he trying to bring her across state lines to get her an abortion, or am I getting that mixed with No,
I cannot. Bad. I'm not sure about that.
No, it's Rick Pitino is who I'm thinking of now.
Yeah,
never mind.
Okay.
Got my shithead coaches mixed up in my head. Sorry.
it's the college to pros thing is not great. One other thing I do like, and I think you should bet right now if you want to bet it, Buffalo Bills team total over 27.5 is available at -110. They're playing the Kansas City Chiefs. Keep an eye on the weather. That's the only reason why I don't think. But Philadelphia scored 14 points in a blink of an eye against this team. Buffalo is going to come in hot because they lost the AFC title game last year in this spot. It is a Sunday night and even Arrowhead. But look, even if the Bills don't score early, you'd assume the Chiefs will. And if the Chiefs do, then Buffalo's pushing the pace later. Four touchdowns doesn't seem like that big of an ask against this Chiefs defense.
I love it. Let's get out of here, Mike. We've got a big weekend ahead, starting Friday with all of the races at Keeneland, the Breeders' Cup when you're in the Alcibiades and the Phoenix. So make sure you check out racingdudes.com for all the previews, the analysis, the Soma Bombs, the Rocket Picks, the Ricky's Rockets. Sorry, Ricky. And, of course, the racingdudes.com/sports section. We'll be back on Monday to somehow talk about 30 races again like we did last Monday. So thanks for joining us for that one. And thank you for joining us today. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Curtis Kellerward. He is at SummerBomb18, #1, #8, Corporate Overlords, at Racing_Dudes. Blinkers Off is going to be live in about 35 minutes, 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. So tune in here to the YouTube channel, to the Twitter, however you're watching us. We really appreciate it. We'll be back on Monday, as I mentioned. Until then, I'm Magic.
And I'm Mike.
Hope this cold goes away. See you then.
The Magic Mike Show, where you hear the experts speak. The Magic Mike Show. Tune into the show every week. The Magic Mike Show. You can trust the show is the bomb because it's being brought to you by RacingDudes.com.
Death, taxes, and Magic Mike on Monday.